Thank you, Dave. I'd like to start by thanking Johns Hopkins Center for a Livable Future for the invitation to speak today. So what I'd like to do in the next 15 to 20 minutes is talk about the nutritional benefits of eating fish and the risks from eating fish and kind of start this discussion. Let me see how we advance here. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about the benefits, the risks. We'll talk specifically about mercury, PCBs. I'll have a slide on the Deepwater Horizon BP oil spill from some new data there, and then talk about how we've pulled this together in fish advisories. So one of the things that we do at Purdue University is try to develop evidence-based information for pregnant and nursing women so they can make informed decisions about their seafood consumption. And I'll get into that as I proceed through the talk. So the Institute of Medicine came out with the Seafood Choices Benefits report a couple years ago in 2006, and they looked at the evidence that supports consuming of seafood for the good health of the fetus or the infant and the child, and I've kind of assembled what their findings were here. So they found that there is some evidence to suggest that eating seafood by mom will bring the baby to full-term gestation, which is very good, as you know, for the health of the baby. The evidence on birth weight is still being discussed. I put the plus sign and the question mark because the committee felt that we need to do more studies to really solidify this relationship. Then there are studies on the infant and child, and until about a month ago, we were pretty solid on the benefit of eating seafood for visual acuity and sensory motor development and cognitive development of the young child. A study that just came out in October that was presented in JAMA suggested that fish oils did not show any benefit in cognitive development benefits in 18-month-old children. There was a good review of this paper, or comment critique of this paper by Emily Okun at Harvard University, and she suggested that possibly the test that's used to evaluate cognitive development, sensory motor development, was probably not as appropriate for an 18-month-old as it would be for a 4-year-old. So it would be interesting to see if this study continues for a couple more years to see if we start to see some of those effects. I was a little concerned reading the paper that it was hard for them to characterize the omega-3 fatty acid status of the moms coming into the study. Some of those coming in might have had a very high level of omega-3s because they were fish eaters before they went on to a low omega-3 diet. So I think we need to still follow this study and see where it leads. But I'm still strongly a believer that if mom consumes seafood that has omega-3 fatty acids, it's very, very beneficial for the early development of the infant. And then I've put a plus sign and a zero next to where this committee felt that we need a lot more evidence before we find a correlation between fish consumption and those benefits. The story later in life is a little more clear, and I didn't intend for you to read this, but I wanted to introduce this just by talking about sudden cardiac death. And so this doesn't relate to safety or health during pregnancy or nutrition. There was an excellent study report done by Mozafarian and Rim a couple years ago where they looked at sudden cardiac death. It was a meta-analysis looking at all the studies. And first, I want to introduce sudden cardiac death. So sudden cardiac death is death that occurs within 1 hour of a heart attack. And there's something about omega-3 fatty acids that protects the heart during that lack of oxygen that occurs during the heart attack. And if we could get people to eat more or get more of these omega-3s into their diet, the survivability from that heart attack increases. So let me talk about his evidence. So here's what they found. Modest fish consumption, 1 to 2 servings per week, especially species higher in EPA and DHA, the omega-3 fatty acids in fish, reduces the risk of coronary death by 36% and total mortality by 17%. Intakes of 250 milligrams per day of EPA and DHA appear sufficient for primary protection. So how many lives could we save if we got people to get more seafood into their diet and more omega-3s into their bodies? The American Heart Association says that we lose about 340,000 people every year to sudden cardiac death. If we could save near 36%, that's 120,000 lives saved every year just by getting them to eat fish that contains omega-3 fatty acids or taking a fish oil supplement. So the magnitude here is quite quite great. And I ask you to remember that as we start to talk a little bit about the risks later in the presentation. So you've seen this from Dave, and I think you'll see something similar to this. The only thing I wanted to point out is at the bottom. In the U.S., we're eating about 15.8 pounds per person per year. That's gone down. 2 years ago, it was 16.6, and then it went to 16.0, and now it's 15.8. The recommendation from public health organizations is that we eat about 26 pounds per person per year. So we've got a ways to go to catch up to that. Let's talk a little bit about how much of these omega-3 fatty acids we need to take in. So the National Academy of Sciences weighed in 2002, and they recommended that pregnant or nursing women get about 140 milligrams per day of EPA plus DHA. The Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee, two sessions ago in 2004, recommended 8 ounces of fish per week with the idea that this might provide EPA and DHA at 500 milligrams per day. The American Heart Association had a long-standing recommendation of 2 servings, 2 to 3 ounces of fatty fish per week. And if you're a cardiac patient, if you've been diagnosed with cardiac problems, your physician will likely recommend that you get about 1,000 milligrams per day of EPA and DHA. So now what I'd like to do is compare these guidelines to what's in fish that we might consume. So here in the light blue bar, you see the National Academy of Sciences recommendation for pregnant nursing women that we gave on the previous slide. The orange is a dietary guidelines, 500 milligrams per day, and the yellow is for cardiac patients. So you can see if I'm eating Atlantic salmon, it's at a rate of 8 ounces per week, I'm probably getting enough of the omega-3s I need if I'm pregnant or nursing. Rainbow trout provides over two and a half times the amount a pregnant woman needs. But then we get to channel catfish. Channel catfish will be very similar to tilapia, another popular fish, would provide very little of the omega-3 fatty acids. And then our light canned tuna, again, very little. If I were to look at albacore tuna, it would be more like rainbow trout. So you can see that not all fish are good sources of omega-3 fatty acids. So it really depends on the species. So let's change and talk a little bit about the risks, starting first with mercury. Mercury crosses the placenta, enters into breast milk. Clearance from mom's body, it takes about a year. And fetuses and infants exposed to high levels to this developmental toxicant have been shown to have abnormalities in memory, attention, and language skills. So we see that it works on the nervous system. One study that caught my attention was done by Dr. Jane Hightower, published back in 2003. She was working with patients living in San Francisco, and these were high-end consumers of higher mercury fish. So they were eating blackened swordfish, for instance, on a regular basis for the health benefits. And some of her patients were experiencing symptoms including fatigue, headache, decreased memory, decreased concentration, muscle and joint pain. And these symptoms went away when they modified their diet and reduced their mercury intakes. So this didn't get my attention mostly from a risk to adults. It got my attention as a risk to the fetus and a nursing infant for adults who are consuming this type of fish. The brain is really developing that third trimester and in early infancy, and so mercury potentially has a greater effect at that stage of life than it would be for an adult. NHANES looks at things like mercury in the blood, and they found that this study reported by CDC found that 5.7% of U.S. women between 16 and 49 years of age have levels of mercury in their blood that exceeds the EPA's reference dose. That reference dose is considered a safe level of exposure over a lifespan. Now, does that mean that 5.7% of women are going to be sick or experience illness from this? So here's a graphic from the EPA. And I want to try and give you a little bit of context. So blood mercury is shown on the bottom. Cumulative frequency of individuals is on the left bar. Over to the very far right, you see that purple line. That's the point at which people will show symptoms. If they ingest that much mercury, we're pretty sure that the symptoms will start to show up at that level. But we tend in public health not to set the safety limit very close to where we know people are going to become ill. We put in an uncertainty factor. So the uncertainty factor of 10 has gone in to give us the reference dose, which is considered our safe limit of exposure. So if we look at our 5.7% of women from the previous slide, that's that little bit at the top that passes the yellow bar. will those women be at risk? Their risk will increase, but I would not say that they will experience illness as a result of their intake of mercury. PCBs, another environmental contaminant, crosses the placenta, enters breast milk. My big concern about PCBs is it takes 6 years to clear from the body. So one scenario that is likely is a woman could eat a highly contaminated fish meal today and be nursing her infant 3 years from now and give a bigger dose to the infant than she got because it's cleared with the body fat. Much like mercury, it's a developmental toxicant. It works on the nervous system. So infants exposed at high levels have altered postnatal development, lower birth weight, smaller head circumference, poorer short-term memory. In my opinion, we'll talk about recommendations in a little bit, but in my opinion, most of the problem with PCBs comes from recreationally caught fish, fish you catch in your local rivers and streams. Almost every state in the U.S. has problems with Superfund sites that are still pushing a lot of PCBs into the environment. So in Indiana, for instance, I think we have about 17 Superfund sites, and we're typical of most states. You can get levels of PCBs in the fish that you'd consume at 200 times the safety limit, really high levels. I'll talk about just briefly about commercial fish, but for all intents and purposes, PCBs, in my opinion, is a real issue with recreationally caught fish, not with commercial fish that you typically get in grocery stores or restaurants. There was a study that caught a lot of the national attention by Heitz and crew looking at farm salmon and PCBs in farm salmon, and we took a look at this risk. So here's our numbers that we developed right after that study was published in 2004. From eating 8 ounces of farm salmon every week for 70 years, which is 13 times the current consumption rate, cancer risk increases by 4 in 100,000 people. The current cancer risk is 25,000 for every 100,000 people, so we'd be basically moving that up very little from 25,000 to 25,004. For 300 million people, this is an estimated 12,000 cancers over 70 years. Now remember from the earlier slide, what did we say the number of lives we could save if we could get people to eat fish like salmon that has higher levels of omega-3 fatty acids in them? It was about 120,000 lives a year. So you can see that when we put this on the risk-benefit scale, that the benefits from eating farm salmon for protecting people from sudden cardiac death far, far, far outweigh the risk from cancer over a lifespan.
PCBs specifically?
PCBs, yes.
Why PCBs? Where they
PCBs were used until the 70s, industrial chemical.
Sure,
used.
Why?
Most contaminants get into the fish from their diet, okay? So they're getting in there because, and so don't omega-3s. So if you raised a fish only, and this is like what happens with catfish, if you raised a fish only on corn and soybeans as the main feed, they would get no omega-3 fatty acids in there, so they would be low in omega-3 fatty acids. So both omega-3 fatty acids and these contaminants get into the animal from what it consumes. And so we harvest small species from the oceans, the menhaden, the herring, those type of species, and we incorporate them as fish oil and fish meal into the salmon's diet. And that's how the omega-3s get in there and the low levels of PCBs. Good, thank you. Okay. Just one slide here because we've had a lot of discussion about the BP oil disaster, and I wanted to incorporate this since it's a new finding. NOAA and FDA and state agencies tested crab, finfish, oysters, and shrimp for these agents, and I've listed two of the primary classes, dioctyl sodium sulfate, which was used as a dispersant in the Gulf, and polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, which is associated with the petroleum products. They did a pretty good sized study, 1,730 samples. They had 13 positives for the dispersant, DOSS, but these levels were well below what they have set as a safety limit of 100 parts per million for finfish and well below the 500 parts per million limit for shrimp, crab, and oysters. So from what I can tell from the data, this is a pretty extensive study based on other studies we typically use. These products are safe and should be consumed. There are still some closed areas of the Gulf that are not allowed for commercial or recreational fishing, and that's about 4% of the fishing grounds that are still closed there. So those are still being examined. Those won't be brought online for production or consumption until those tests are completed and they're shown to be safe. So let's put this together. We've gone through this very quickly, the benefits of eating seafood. We've touched on it quickly, and some of the risks for mercury and PCBs. And this is a statement that came out of the Harvard School of Public Health, which our group subscribes to. If pregnant women were to replace fish high in mercury with fish low in mercury and higher in omega-3 fatty acids, we've added that, cognitive development benefits could be achieved with virtually no nutritional losses. So our target, in my opinion, for pregnant nursing women is to get them to eat seafood that contains these healthy fats that'll help their babies. But we also want them to avoid the higher level of pollutants. So on the seats, when you arrived, we put on some wallet cards that we developed a couple years ago, and this is the second evolution of this. What we've tried to do is take a page from the Monterey Bay Aquarium, which develops a card for based on sustainability, environmental impact. We've developed this card only based on the health of the baby. So there's no environmental aspects incorporated into this card. Not saying that that's not important, but that's the purpose of this card was to give advice to keep the babies healthy. So you can see on your card, we've got some recommendations of how much fish to consume. Comment on where, if you catch fish, where should you go, and I'll show you where you should go to get that information. And then we've categorized the fish into the lowest mercury, the moderate mercury, the high mercury that pregnant nursing women should not be consuming, and then the ones that have the higher levels of omega-3 fatty acids. So if you go to our website, you can take a look at some supporting information there. Our website looks like this. It's fishforhealth.net. And if you like to fish in your state, you can click on your state, and you'll be placed into a local state website, probably your health department, and find out about advisories that pertain to recreationally caught fish. So two summers ago, we developed an iPhone app, and to make it a little more convenient, got on a wave here. And so we've taken the wallet card and put it into this same sort of format. So women will basically click on these buttons and they can find that same advice that comes off the wallet card. We've categorized the fish up there on the right. We've actually got FDA pictures of the fish. If you don't know what fish you have in your hand, you might be able to find it that way. And last summer, we built a calculator. We're pretty proud of this because we're hoping it might have some benefit. So the woman can personalize her advisory. So she starts by putting in her body weight, because everything on dosage is based on body weight, and that's confidential in her own iPhone, so we don't disclose that. And those will be asterisks in the new version, so you won't even see it. The woman picks whether she wants to go by the 140 milligrams per day advisory or the 500, and that little eye information button gives her advice as to how to choose between those two. Then she decides whether she wants a report in ounces or grams, and whether she wants a daily notification saying, have you eaten fish, do you want to put it into the system? And then she'll go and she'll pick the fish from a long alphabetical list. The omega-3 fatty acids came from the USDA's nutrient database, which many of you probably use. Most of the mercury data came from the FDA's mercury database. And so here's an example. This person ate Atlanta mackerel, 6 ounces. It was after cooking on this date. And after these are accumulated, the woman can go back and look at a log of what she's consumed. And at the very bottom, she clicks View Report, and she gets a very simple report, how she consumed seafood based on recommendations of 8 to 12 ounces per week, how is her intake of omega-3s, EPA and DHA, compared to her target intake that she selected, and her mercury intake. And there at the bottom, in the one day, you can see how many days she exceeded the safety limit for that day, because we don't want to just dilute this data over, say, a 9-month period. We want to make sure she knows that there are days she might have gotten a bigger dose of that mercury. And the same for PCBs. And so, wrapping up, women that are pregnant or nursing should eat 8 to 12 ounces of seafood per week. They should avoid seafood that's higher in pollutants like mercury and PCBs. They should eat seafood that provides these healthy nutrients, like omega-3 fatty acids. And from my perspective, it's easy to see that communicating a multi-pronged message is rather difficult to do. Oftentimes, we put this message out there, and we still have a lot of physicians telling women who are pregnant not to eat seafood. That's just bad advice. It's bad advice. So we want to try and prevent unintended consequences by building these instruments that I've shown you today to hopefully help the woman to make an informed decision about her seafood consumption. I guess since I have to run out of the room, I apologize. We'll take a couple questions now. Yeah, and I will acknowledge that those are serious issues about overfishing and sustainability. But we have really developed this only from a basis of what's healthy for the, what's important for the baby, for the baby's health. So I would like to leave that kind of discussion for others here on the panel, because I think it's important, but it's not the area I work in. So I try to take all of my information from perspective of what is the best information to keep that baby healthy. Yeah. Okay. Let me comment on that. Some people recommend that we eat flax oil to get our omega-3 fatty acids. And the more recent studies show that conversion of flax oil, which is alpha-linolenic acid, to EPA and DHA is very, very inefficient. So most of the folks that I'm reading in the scientific literature now say that's not the most practical way of getting the EPA and DHA, which are important for the baby's health, into mom's diet. I won't comment on sustainability because it really is outside my discipline. I'm not trying to say it's unimportant. Yes. Yeah, many of our models on PCBs assume a 50% loss during cooking, and we've done studies like that, so when that fat drips away, the PCBs drip away also. So that assumption is built into most of our models for predicting what a person's exposed to. Up front? Yeah, there hasn't been a really good comparison on fish oil versus fish. There are studies that really look at fish and some that look at fish oil. And so some nutritionists are wondering, are there other nutrients in fish? And we know this. Are there other nutrients in fish that you don't get from a fish oil? So from a nutritional recommendation point of view, I tend to subscribe with, if the whole foods provides that nutrient, it's best to recommend consumers get the whole food, because some people have, as we've known over the last couple decades, have overdone it on, say, on a supplement. They take much more than they need, thinking that this is better for them. The quality assurance on some of these supplements isn't really what it should be in some cases. So my default is, if the whole food provides that nutrient, it's generally better to try and get people to get that nutrient in the whole food as opposed to a... the one that just came in JAMA was only fish oils. Okay. Right behind her?
We may have to cut the questions.
Two more?
Short.
One more?
Maybe one more.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, there's some evidence in the literature talking about individual populations. Some of the stuff that's really driving us these days is Chinese consumers. Studies out of New York City show that women who still speak Chinese and inherited their diet when they came from China are eating higher mercury fish, and their exposure levels can be many times what the U.S. population is. So there is concern for certain populations. I've seen streamside surveys, and I'm not really sure that data is really going to get us to an exposure assessment. So I think we need to do a lot more in that regard. Now, our iPhone app is available. If Spanish is the language on your app, it comes through in Spanish. But if it's Chinese, we also have it in traditional and simplified Chinese on our iPhone app. So when you set the language on your iPhone, it basically changes that. Yeah. Well, it's a small number of your population. Okay. Thank you.